I'll go home and pack my clothes. You go get your these and those, and away we'll go. Off we're gonna shuffle, shuffle off to Buffalo.
You already did me.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for day three of the Fector's Finger Flicking Frolic for the mid. And so I am here with Shoma this morning. By the way, good morning.
Good morning.
And Shoma's from Budapest.
Budapest, Hungary.
That's right, Hungary. And that for those of you who are going to be tuning in to this one and haven't heard the first couple of days update, we are doing updates each day from the Fector's Finger Flicking Frolic, which is the 4F convention. And, of course, that is the imitation-only original close-up convention that is held in Batavia the last weekend of April each year. So, that being said, I wanted just to talk with Shoma about his book. We had talked in Bristol last year in May when we were over at the Bristol Day of Magic, and he had given just a fantastic lecture that was about music and sound and using that in your act. You gave that lecture, I think, here at Fector's also, didn't you, a couple of years ago?
Yeah, a couple of years ago.
Yeah. And you've been talking about putting together a book. And so what's the status on, just kind of wanted to hear an update on how the book's coming along.
It's almost ready, actually.
Okay.
The thing is, we finished all the content part.
Mm-hmm.
I really want somebody to write the forewords to the book.
Mm-hmm.
I have a few people in mind, but I want somebody to be, you know, worthy of the book and
sure.
speeches. And I need some conclusion at the end. But basically everything, every topic that we wanted to discover about music and magic, we did.
Mm-hmm.
From legal issues to where to find your music, music recognition apps, how to practice the music, what music not to use, editing softwares, how to edit music, websites, royalty-free music, really every aspect of there is. I tried to keep it very straightforward so that it's, you know, it doesn't get out of hand. I think it's going to be a, how do you say this in English, a very tight book, you know.
Okay.
Lots of tips and tricks and, I mean, not magic tricks, but tricks
very
how
sure.
to use music. So it's almost ready, but I didn't want to push it because it's writing a book is like being in love a little bit. It's
and giving birth to a child. Probably. We wouldn't know that as men.
Well,
but.
I don't know about that one. But anyways, I want it to be perfect as much as it can be. So I think I had a lot of very intense and very time-consuming projects end of last year and beginning of this year.
Right.
So after getting home from 4F, May is going to be, and June, a little bit more laid back, relaxed. So I'm kind of hoping I can put an end.
More time and attention to it.
Yep.
Now, this is going to be written in English, and being from Hungary, that will it be interpreted in other languages also, or is it just going to be in English only? Or
in English only. I started writing the book in English originally,
mm-hmm.
but then I realized how much better I can write in Hungarian.
Okay.
So just because, for the sake of having it as good as possible,
sure.
I decided to write in Hungarian, and it was translated by a professional translator into English because I really wanted to.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Okay, so yeah, you write in your native language and then let someone else translate.
Because that's what they do better. This is what
sure.
I do better.
Right. Rather than trying to do both.
Yeah.
You won't be able to have that streaming flow, free form of thought, you know, basically when you're writing. Well, the question is about legality, you know, we're using copyrighted music in an act, and so have you studied or looked at, or will this include those legalities as it relates to American
absolutely, yeah.
the law?
Well, I decided to discuss, I think every country has a slightly different law.
That was my question. Do you discuss other countries also and talk about what's legal in their countries? Or
Well, I know a lot about Hungary, and we discussed
sure.
America in the book. I didn't go into all the countries because then it would be no stopping. Like I could.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah.
So, but I give advice and how to look into the local legal laws discussing the issue.
Yeah. Okay. And now going a different direction over here, that we have several FISM winners here, including you, who are at the 4F this year. And you had won in what year was that FISM?
2009.
2009. In Beijing.
Beijing,
okay.
So I can say that I have a world champion title that's made in China.
That's good. That's very good. And was that with the Phone Act, or which act was that?
Yeah, it was the Phone Act.
Okay.
It was the Phone Act.
And are you developing something for the next competition, or are you going to be coming to FISM in Rimini, Italy next year?
I am. For sure. I'll be there. It's not so far for me.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah.
It would be stupid not to go.
Yeah.
I'm not competing anymore. I stopped competing because why would I compete?
You've proven everything you need to.
Plus I do think, like, I did win FISM, and people ask me, so how does it feel to be the best magician in the world? It would feel, if that be true, but that, you know, I just think I was maybe the best at that competition, or, you know, I did practice a lot, I did work a lot, but magic is an art form, and I think I was lucky enough to win FISM. I don't want to, you know, try again to maybe fail or anything like this.
Right.
So I'm happy, and I want to give space to the upcoming generation.
I often wondered why it is that some people feel like that they have to continue to compete in the same competition. In other words, after you've already won something, why go back to that same convention or to that same region or country or whatever to compete then again? From the standpoint that you actually have, you're trying to win something again, you know, are you trying to prove that you really are the best in that whole area? You know, that always confuses me again. Why? I mean, that makes sense. You've won FISM.
We are not swimmers or runners. You know,
right.
You don't have to prove every year. I think FISM is a way to show yourself, and if you win, you'll get a lot of bookings out of it. You'll get to travel the world.
Right.
And at this point, I got in contact with everybody who I need to get in contact with all around the world. If I have a new act, then I can just call them. And magic is an art form. It's not, you're not horses to race.
Right, right. Yeah, and art continues to evolve and move, certainly. That I was talking yesterday with Chris Pillsworth, who was talking about how that magic should be something that would grow, and as you add something to your act, you know, that you might put to bed something else you've had for a long time, and you kind of grow and evolve. Do you see your magic changing, or are you still working with, you know, trying to tweak the existing act? Or
No. Many people ask me, how long did it take me to finish the Phone Act? I don't consider it to be finished.
Okay.
I'm considering it to be done.
That's interesting, yeah.
Because I still have many other ideas, but I spent 90 years of my life...
90?
Not 90.
So you're not that old.
Yeah, I'm 110, you know, but I do sports regularly. And
workout.
Yeah. No, 9 years, and it was more than enough. I mean, I mean, of course I did other stuff, and I back then went to university and et cetera, but it was more than enough, and I'm happy to work on new things and new projects and new acts and new shows for.
And so, what's new? What's on the horizon right now? What have you got? Something that you have presented, or you got something you're just working on? Or
we did. I was on tour with one of the nicest philharmonic orchestras in Hungary in February, and they asked me to just do magic as a part of their show, but separately. And I told them, I can do that, but let's do it together then if I'm there.
Yeah.
So we ended up doing three pieces together. And I had a full Philharmonic Orchestra play live music for me on stage, which was such an amazing experience, really a dream coming true. On top of this, I got to compose one of the pieces for the orchestra that they played for me, which was, I cannot put this in words. I mean,
no,
so much.
Dream come true.
Yeah, really. So, but I could feel, you know, we spent a couple of months working on these tricks and projects, but I could feel that there's so much more in this. Like, so I'm actually thinking I might, I talked to the organizers of the event and the director of the orchestra, and they enjoyed it much as well. So we might start putting together a show soon, with a full orchestra and me as a magician, a full night show, which would be great. I'm guessing that would air probably like 2016 or so.
Right.
Yeah.
That would really be a long working process.
Yeah, it is.
Because you've got to figure out the music to go with certain things. But
finally, it wasn't like, you know, corporate entertainment and hee 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 ha ha ha.
Right.
And there's Obi with the whistle.
That's right. That means we got to rally
go
up.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, but anyways, I really could feel that, you know, this is much more on the art side of magic. And I'm creating art and not just, you know, entertainment, like,
right,
making people laugh, but this is more.
Right. Right. I have seen magic done. I think David Seebach had traveled with an orchestra, I think maybe in Milwaukee or someplace in Wisconsin. And I've seen some others who have traveled, you know, and doing some shows with Philharmonic. And having a live, first of all, live band of any sort or behind you, but an orchestra, you know, is just phenomenal.
Yeah.
So I think that Wonderful to work with.
We'll see. The only issue is that I'm working right now, is that I'm thinking about really, is that the only problem was that there was too many musicians on stage. Like, it didn't give me a whole lot more space to work with on stage. And we had, like, big stages. So we're going to have to figure out to either use only a certain amount of musicians or, I don't know. But we'll see.
Yeah, we'll work it out. Well, I guess we probably ought to run in and see this.
For the,
that's right.
Who's
Shomer
lecturing?
Thinks, it's not a lecture. It's going to be the, I think this morning is the Pat Page workshop, and it's going to be for tricks that were invented before 1950. So it's going to be some old tricks, maybe with some new presentations.
Oh, cool.
So it's a Pat Page Memorial workshop. It's hosted by Mike Powers.
Go.
Okay, let's go.
All
that was Shoma, and for the Magic Word, this is Scotty L. Well, we are on day three. No, what is this? Two or three? I think
this is two.
Still. Okay.
This is Thursday. Friday.
Today's Friday. Thank you. I'm glad you said that. Keeping me up because you weren't here yesterday, but I got with me then Rocco Solano. Hey there, Rocco.
Hey, what's up, Scott? I came in late last night.
You were here. Like,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
well, then
right,
you missed the scotch that we had.
So. Oh, I saw him drinking it, though, but tonight you're going to save me one,
right?
Yeah,
I'm not going to miss you tonight.
Yeah.
Good. And so you came over from the city, or you've been traveling around the country, the world, or what you're doing?
Yeah, well, I've been traveling around the world for the past 4 years. That's why I wasn't here for the past 4 years.
That's
April, I was at the Crazy Horse in Paris. One April, I was touring China. Last April, I was in Italy. This year, I miss the people. Just seeing everybody's faces, like, really, it's a beautiful thing. I see you more than I see my own relatives.
Uh-huh.
So to have fun and see all these new tricks. I like the kid we saw tonight from Spain.
Oh, yeah, with the cigarettes. That was awesome.
He's my new favorite magician. Oh, man, amazing.
You know, it kind of reminded me of Jan Frisch a little bit. Remember who won the FISM a few years ago?
Okay,
He was here, and it was just, it was so different.
Reminded me of Johnny Depp. What he would do as a magician. A little Johnny Depp in that character.
I can see that.
Yeah, that's what happens when an actor does magic right there.
Yeah. I thought he looked like a little bit like Doug Henning in a way, as far as his look.
The wonderment that he came across with.
That it just was happening at his fingertips, and his, like a Cardini kind of thing.
That's what happens when an actor does magic, man. Yeah. I loved it. Yeah. Loved it.
He was really stellar. Traveling. You've been, again, performing with the Masters of Magic or something. What is it? Couture?
Masters of Magic was a show in Italy.
Yeah.
Now I'm traveling with another magician in China. Doing illusions. He does illusions, and I'm his opening act. So we've been touring around China.
Okay.
I'll go back there in August. Then I go to Russia to do a television show with the president of FISM. Domenico Dante invited me to do a show in October in Russia.
All right.
And I'm just going all over the place. The younger, I couldn't get booked when I was young. Now the older I get, I'm getting all these bookings around the world. I couldn't even imagine me ever going. Like Mongolia.
Wow. Who would have thought?
Who would have thought? Mongolia.
Yeah, no, these are large stage shows, I assume.
And so tremendous. Big theaters, 3,000-seat theaters. But their technology in China has made close-up magic and parlor magic possible for the audience to appreciate. They got these amazing LED screens on the stage now with these cameras that you can make any close-up trick play big.
Wow. Yeah. And so you can be doing anything, I guess, just because they got the big image magnifiers
exactly,
and
stuff. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Now, how long is your act that you perform?
I like doing 15 or 17 minutes right now. Mm-hmm. What I'm going to do tonight here was a bit, I did it the Crazy Horse. It's only 10 minutes. But I like doing 17. That's why I end with the water, and I'm going to do what I do tonight. You know, a lot of food, a lot of products, a lot of stuff.
Like, we always do something every year. Well, it used to be, as you said, it's been a few years since you've last been here.
Yeah.
But you always do something special, you know, for guys.
I always do something different every year, especially for the 4F guys. But this year, I'm going to be performing what I've been doing professionally around the world for the past 3 years.
Yeah.
I could do my eyes closed. I wasn't stressed out. What am I going to do? What am I going to come up with? But maybe next year, I'll come up with something different to customize it to the people. Like, you know, so many things. I can't remember myself what I've done through the years.
Yeah. And as far as the shows that you have been doing, it is the same show night after night. And then are you touring in different theaters, or is it like in just the major city, the capitals?
The Crazy Horse, it's three shows a night in the same theater.
And how long was that contract?
That was, first time was 3 months, second time was 6 months. Mm-hmm. And it was really hard work for a guy that got to do three shows a night and set up your show every night and set up. And by the time you know, you got flash burns, you got confetti in your eyeballs, you got glitter all over
glitter,
the place.
Glitter, right.
Yeah, that many shows wears you out. The China shows are different theaters touring. Beijing, Shanghai, different cities, all these little cities and big cities in China all have amazing theaters. They want to compete with each other, so they're building these amazing big theaters, like the Poly Theaters.
Yeah.
That's that theater there, they're all about 3,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
And Lu Chen has made magic very popular in China, so I'm spending a lot of time in China.
Hmm.
I'll be in Reno doing a fundraiser with Larry Wilson, you know, the magician Larry Wilson.
Right, sure.
In October, and then July I'm doing a lecture, live simulcast lecture with Penguin Magic.
Oh, okay.
I'd like to have a lot of people come and watch that, because we're going to come up with a lot of...
What's the date? I think I did see something on there.
July 25th or 26th.
Okay.
Yeah, I really appreciate it if you get as many people
I will.
There, because I think that's going to be my last lecture. It's hard enough traveling, performing, but traveling, lecturing, it'd be like a traveling salesman.
Yeah.
That's done. This is my last lecture. I'm retiring from lecturing right here.
I was going to say, you've lectured here and had some stuff sold. Line, of course, your Delights.
Yeah, the Delights sold about 7 million each.
7 now, million?
Now, 7 million. Now we have a new trick. I kind
what
of
you got?
Took Sly Dini's Lincoln pins. That was in a small version.
I've got to take a picture of this and put this on a blog here, too.
Well, I would give you a set for yourself.
Oh, wow.
Sly Dini had the Lincoln pins that were small. Now, with these Lincoln pins, you're able to perform for a larger crowd.
That is
we
awesome.
We elevated it, made them so you can hear the pins when they clank.
Right.
So this is a set for you.
Oh.
All right? You can get these through Las Vegas Magic. You know, on my website, but they were just introducing that to the public.
Wow. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
And so, what is your website so people can go and take a look at this, by the way?
DelightNext.com. DelightNext. NEXT.
And that's DLITE.
Yes. The Delight product. Yep, and now we're taking it to the next generation, so we're going DelightNext.com. And you have all my products that are going to be on air, and probably on with Penguin, too.
Yeah. You had said there's like 7 million Delights that have sold.
Have been sold all over the world.
And so are you going to continue to, what's the plan?
Yes, we are. Well, right now, Roger Dreyer and Phantasma Magic is putting out a Rocco Magic set that as soon as I leave here, I go back with Toys R Us and I film the instructional video.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be ready in
July.
Phantasma. Mm-hmm. He's putting together, because actually now the Chinese have really knocked us off and ripped us off and made so many knockoffs.
Yeah, like at FISM and Beijing. I think it was someone selling those and I kicked them out and they came back the next day and it was,
So for now, I say good luck to everyone. May the best and the strongest businessman win. Because the patent is about to expire in about 7-8 months.
Oh.
So then whoever has the best business plan, knock yourself out. Go sell as many Delights as you can.
Yeah.
I know that's what I'm going to do. And I'm hooking up with Roger Dreyer from Phantasma Magic. And he's going to bring it out to places like Korea and Mexico and the UK and just places that really haven't been exposed to magic. Hopefully to plant that little bit of a seed and create that wonderment in all the children and people around the world to believe in magic.
That's going to be great. And lecture with Penguin, I know they let you go however long you want, whether it's 2, 3, 4, 5 hours, however long.
I'm planning 5 hours. I'm going to cover everything that I've done from day one. All this.
When you say this is going to be your last lecture, you're really going to just throw it in.
I got a suitcase already to my car I travel with.
Yeah.
Just a bunch of stuff that who knows what's going to happen. We're going to turn water into ice. We're going to turn grass seed into grass. We're going to do some of Sly Dini's techniques on the wrapping and timing. Everything that I've done over the past 25 years, I want to put it all down with Penguin and just do my little quiet act. Too much stuff in my brain.
Now, when you had studied with Sly Dini, so many guys have taken lessons from Sly Dini.
Yeah.
Would you say that you were a good friend and a student? Tell me a little stories or something about him.
I took about 15 classes with him,
and
then after the first couple, he started liking me because we started speaking Italian to each other.
Ah.
So we started talking Italian.
Did he ever fix dinner for you or something? It seems like I'd heard
he was a good cook. He came to my house. My mother cooked
Bill Wish told me this.
Yeah, Bill Wish. Yes, he was Bill Wish was a great magician and a great student of Sly Dini. And there was a time where Sly Dini was angry with me. I took a bunch of lessons, and then I went to Las Vegas, the seminar, and I won the competition, Sixth and Roy lesson.
I remember that.
And then I went touring for a year.
Yeah.
And then when I finally called Sly Dini back up, he says, "Where you been? How come you take some lessons with me and you disappear and I'm my friend no more?" He was angry with me. He said, "No, I was busy, sorry, working."
He was serious.
He was serious.
Wow,
he was serious.
That had to upset you a little bit. Then.
Yeah, no doubt, because, you know, he always wanted you to call him. He didn't want to just be used. He didn't want people to come in, take one lesson and say, "I studied with Sly Dini," and really have no idea about Sly Dini's magic. He really sat me down and gave me the whole core of stuff that he was performing, the pins, the silks. So many great stories. I remember seeing him before he died. I went to visit him at the nursing home in West Orange, 10 days before he died.
Mm.
And the place smelled really bad. He'd always put on a tie every time he'd wake up in the morning. He didn't have a tie on anymore.
Yeah.
He'd always have his gold pins shiny clean. Here, he said to me, you know, I was about to go to Magic Castle. He said, when you go out to the Magic Castle, can you perform one of my tricks so that people don't forget me after I'm gone?
Oh, my goodness.
I said, well, what would you like me to do? He went in his drawer and he took out his gold pins, the mystery of the gold pins, the way he performed it. And he gave them to me, but they were all dirty and breadcrumbs inside. They weren't polished the way he had it when he was in his prime. So I do three of his tricks that I keep with me forever, sliding newspaper tears, sliding silks, and the Lincoln pins.
Lincoln pins.
And I've made them bigger now, so this way it can be played to a bigger crowd. Here's another little idea. See what you think of this. You know how people do the dye tube?
Yeah.
They take the handkerchief, and this is just an idea I'm coming up with a penguin. Let's say this is four different flavors. You have your dye tube on, grape, red, yellow, lime. Okay, you do your whole thing.
Kind of a checkerboard color.
Yeah, checkerboard, because you got flavors. And as you come out, the napkin turns, the yellow turns white, and the green comes out white. And so now when you make your steel for the gimmick, you're stuck with that gimmick. So now I've changed the gimmick, so now you can produce the gimmick, and it just looks like
Lifesavers. Yeah, which makes sense.
Which makes sense. Why have to run to get rid of your gimmick and hide it? Just disguise it so it looks like something at the end. Just produce it. And it looks like you got Lifesavers.
Right. That makes sense.
Right? That's one of my ideas.
That's a logical thing.
The logical thing. So now I'm starting to think a lot logical as I get older.
Well, you have the experience and wisdom of age that you have gone back and done all these things. You know what works and doesn't work and what's commercial.
Trial and error. And what's commercial? Mm-hmm. Listen to the audience. They'll tell you what to keep in your show, and they'll tell you what's got to get taken out of your show.
That's right. You know, I talk to street magicians all the time, and they kind of hone their act because, well, I was just talking with a fellow yesterday, Chris Pillsworth, who was saying that they pretty much will tell you by the fact that they're either going to stay and watch or they're going to move on, and if they pay you, you know, and if they're not, then I'm doing something wrong. You know, what do I got to do?
That's
start weeding it out, whittling it down, you know, and chiseling away at that statue.
And when they love something, they let you know. You see that guy we saw tonight, the Spanish guy with the cigarettes?
Yeah.
They let him know. So don't change a thing. It's perfect.
Oh, my gosh.
Perfect little act, man.
Yeah, that was.
That inspires me to see something that good. It inspires me.
Well, you do a lot of stuff with cigarettes also.
But now less and less because it's becoming politically incorrect. But I tell you, you know what trick that I do that people love a lot that I do now? I turn the milk into an ice cream bar.
Yeah, I remember you've done that a few times.
Well, it originated here. Yeah. I was hanging out here ready to go on, doing some stuff custom for the magicians, and I noticed there was an ice cream machine. In the lobby.
Right.
So let me try to get an ice cream. You see what happens. I bought an ice cream. I said, oh, it fits. Let me try this.
Yeah.
And I went out and I produced an ice cream.
That
evening.
Yeah.
They went wild. It's okay.
Yeah.
That's in the act. Keep it. People can relate to it.
Yeah.
People can relate with generic stuff. If you take wine, what would that turn into? Grapes.
Grapes, yeah.
If you take water, what would that turn into? Ice or steam?
Yeah.
Right? If you take an orange seed and you covered it, what would it turn into? An orange.
An orange, sure.
So it just makes sense. That's the props that I use, all identifiable
organic
props. Organic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, you can produce something this big, and people won't know what it is, but if it's got Snickers written on it, everybody knows. Everyone's held it. Everybody's touched it.
Sure.
They know it plays from the back of the room where the Snicker bars is. So now I'm starting to use props that people can identify.
And relate to even from a distance.
From a distance. You can produce a ball. Well, what is that? It's round. But if you take that, if the lime and you crack it in half and juice comes out of it, all of a sudden it gives it a whole new property.
Well, even internationally, you know that.
International.
Yeah.
Everybody knows what a Snickers bar is.
That's right.
Everybody knows the certain pretzels.
Yeah, orange or apples or whatever
apples,
it's going to be. Obviously,
whatever
those kinds of things, the Snickers and whatever, you know,
So that's the kind of what I've noticed that people can relate to around the world.
Yeah. Well, I think that was interesting, too, because you could, you know, make up some sort of an ice cream bar that actually is not real ice cream, you know, but you unwrap it and you eat it.
You
got to prove it's real.
I have the fake one just in case this one melts or I can't do it, but trust me, the audience, you don't get that response. You would think, oh, they don't know, but something happens. When you start eating that ice cream, they just say, well, I've eaten it before, and milk comes from ice cream, but how did that happen here? So they kind of put it together in their brain and make their own little...
Sure.
You get it. You get it.
I know exactly what you're saying. Now, question over going back to the show at the Folies Bergère or the
Crazy Horse.
You always look like something's exploded. I mean, like you're talking about glitter and everything else, you know, that's on the stage. How do they clean that up?
I was amazed that they were willing and able to do this.
What do they do? How do they clean up?
Yeah, show, they'd close the curtain, they'd have my name flashing for about 3 minutes, 2.5 minutes while they're playing music. The guys come out nice and slow, no rush, and they put the carpet out. And then after the show, guys come, drag it away, go out on the street, on the, around the corner, and shake it. I was going home from a show, and I said, what's my glitter doing out here? I noticed they're going back, and they're shaking it back there.
Uh-huh.
But one day, they had to tell me that I had to stop doing pretzels in the show, because, you know, I produce a lot of pretzels. And they're telling me after about the first month, we're getting mice in the theater. Can you take the pretzels out?
Yeah.
I said, well, what if I just don't throw them in the air and throw them in the crowd? What if I put them nicely in a little bag?
Yeah.
That's how I got away with it. Produce them. It's a very small theater.
Uh-huh.
But they didn't mind the mess at all. They didn't mind the mess.
Now, I know that Thin John and Tom Mollica and others have worked over the Crazy Horse. So who are some other guys? Yeah. And Kevin James.
Kevin James. Rudy Kobe, Kevin James.
Yeah, Rudy.
Ruby and Fabini.
Yep.
I've heard.
Mm-hmm. Vic and Fabini, yeah.
Vic and Fabini. Otto Wesley, regular there.
Uh-huh.
Otto Wesley.
I haven't seen Otto Wesley in a long time. He doesn't really tour around. I don't see him over in the States very often.
Yeah, no. Well, he's getting, you know, we're all getting older.
Aren't we?
You remember? I remember Otto Wesley was a kid when I saw him at the in Las Vegas when he was there at the Riviera. And now, I think he's 64, 65.
Hmm, okay.
You know, you don't have that energy.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Come on.
Yeah. And so you were there for a few months, and now they only have, I guess, one magician at a time.
Yeah, no, they don't they haven't had magicians there in like 5-6 years.
Oh, is that right? Were you one of the last ones there?
Yeah, one of the last ones. Then they contacted.
Why is that?
It's new ownership. It's no longer Alain Bernardin. Alain Bernardin was the original owner. He loved magicians. There's a dressing room there, three little dressing rooms. He used to have three different novelty acts in the show. He loved magic. Big time. Now it's a German company with three partners on it. It's no longer the same original owners.
Okay, but I guess still girls and dancing and all that
dancing,
kind of thing.
Very great dancing.
That's what they're trying to be known
topless,
for, I guess. Yeah.
Topless.
Hey, let's get out of here.
Okay.
Come on.
So,
sorry, guys.
Live at the Crazy Horse.
So, we were talking about we just got kicked out of the room where we were just a minute ago, so we'll pick up where we were left off, but you were talking about that they have new ownership at the Crazy Horse, and so they really haven't used magicians there for a while.
And they're not paying magicians as much as they used to back then.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's paid back then when Tom Mullick was working, they were paying $5,000 for a four-minute act. Now the acts are really, they've cut them down to half because of the budget, you know, the economy.
Sure. Well, they still have tourists, I guess, coming in. I mean, that's
the only
thing
you have tourists.
Yeah.
They were supposed to open another one in Las Vegas. They contracted me to work there for 5 years. Never opened. They went down.
Yeah.
It's hard to stay in business nowadays with the economy.
Wow.
Magicians are the first ones to get cut out. Obviously, only the best survive.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you can see the ones working now. They're the best.
And so when you're traveling around the rest, who's you have an agent, I guess, who's booking on all the rest of that stuff?
Yeah, I've got a Chinese agent over here, Bogey. Monique from the Cavell Agency is the one that booked me in Paris.
Yeah,
I work with a few different agents. Now it's easy to find you on the computer, internet.
Yeah.
They want you, they'll get you.
Yeah,
you don't
that's
need
true.
You don't need an agent.
Well, I know the time is short, and we have got some other things over here to do, and I appreciate your time a lot. Let me just ask you one other thing then, too, that the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word, as you know,
magic
and so
word,
my question is what your magic word might be. It wouldn't necessarily mean like, you know, abracadabra or something that you would say in the context of a show, but what is your... what do you live by? What is your code? What's important?
Easy to sum up, man.
Okay.
Faith.
I had a feeling you were going to say that.
Higher power, faith in some real magic somewhere. Just faith that after this, we all going to be together in another world.
Wow.
Faith that there's more than just death. Faith that you'll see your cat and your dog and your father that you know haven't seen because they died. Faith that there's an afterlife.
Yeah.
Just
faith.
Is faith. It's faith in a real magic man called God. Faith.
Yeah.
That's it.
We've talked about this before. I knew that.
Well, that's it. That's the magic
word.
You know
that's
that.
Yep.
If you have faith in the grain of mustard seed, you can move mountains.
Yeah.
That's pretty serious.
That's some heavy stuff. That's right. Thank you, Rocco, very much. I appreciate it a lot.
Thank you, man.
Okay,
thank
good.
You and the rest of you, thank you for keeping magic out to the public world. You're the eye of the storm, Scott.
Thank you very much. That was Rocco, and for the magic word, this is Scotty out. Well, we we just finished dinner, but we still have the evening show. We finished the two afternoon shows here on Fector's Finger Flicking Frolic, and I'm here with a guest of honor. You guys have been wondering if I'm going to talk with him, but here he is finally.
Yeah, it's
Sean
a pleasure
Farquhar.
To be back, Scott. Absolutely a pleasure.
Congratulations to you.
Thanks. This is a huge, huge honor. I look at the list of past recipients, and I kind of stare blankly going, pinch me again. Just pinch me again.
Say, me? Why me? Well, this
yeah,
is one honor
exactly.
you haven't gotten yet,
yeah,
I guess.
Wow. Never ever expected it, and it's amazing.
You know, you won so many different awards. How many? You mean your magiccampion.com? So
yeah, I didn't even buy that domain. You know, it was given to me.
Oh, by, is that
yeah,
right?
Vice president of at the time Pro Systems gave it to me as when I won in Orlando, Florida. Mm-hmm. There were two envelopes at the front desk for me. They paged me down, and I said, "Are those for me?" He says, "Well, one of them's for you." And I went, "Pardon?" He says, "I'm supposed to ask you, did you win the contest or not?" And I said, "Yeah, I won." And he goes, "Well, then this
then
envelope
this
is
for you."
And he threw the other one in the trash, and I opened up, and it said, Jim said, I bought you this domain. It's magiccampion.com, blah, blah, blah. And he bought both, double C and single C, and foolish me let the one lapse. Oh. And all I wonder is, I wonder if it said magicloser.com in the other envelope.
That's exactly what I was going to ask you. I wonder if it went you.
Totally. That's how you got to think. It's like, yeah. I have no idea how many international awards. I know that one time back a while ago, I used to promote that it was like over 40, but it's more than that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they all were sweet and savory, I'm sure. You know.
This is a wonderful question. Just recently, a friend of mine, Chris Randall, lost his PCM silver medal. When he broke up with his girlfriend, she threw it in the trash, and he lost. So he phoned me and said, "I know you won a silver and a gold at PCM. Would you be willing to, you know, let me have the silver?" And it was like, I went, "No, it means as much, maybe a little bit more than the gold in some ways, because there's a story behind every one of them." And
I'm sure you can point to these on your wall or whatever and say, "Oh, this and that." Sure.
I'm not the guy that has them all out and up and trophy racked. I'm not that guy.
Okay.
I put out one or two, and the rest all get stored.
You rotate them?
Once in a while, I bring one out, and just because. But not very often. I have just the first one I ever won, the last one I won, and one that meant a lot to me just before my father passed away.
What was that?
It was a PCA.
And your father was there to see you perform?
My father was there to see it. It was the last one. He never saw me win the world championship, but he saw me take second place in that. And so being a magician all his life, that was really kind of cool. And I don't keep them all out.
And so with the all the trophies and everything that you won, is I was about to ask you which one's, you know, the greatest, you know. I mean, this award being the guest of honor, I know
it's phenomenal. This is like I don't think anything will ever top this moment for me, because the people in that room and everything, it's just phenomenal. I mean,
perhaps it's because I would think that it's an ongoing thing, whereas that you have a moment of euphoria, you know, whenever that you have completed, you know, doing a best show and you are given a trophy, and so then you walk out, it's like, this is great, take a picture and everything. But here, all weekend long for like 4 days,
just keeps coming at you. Well, the Grand Prix, when I went at FISM, was unbelievable because it was multiple days following, and I stayed in China, and so the Chinese people, because it was broadcast on TV and seen by like 300 million people.
Right.
It's like 600 million eyes, give or take a few from farming accidents, right?
We
were walking on the streets of China, and people were stopping us and taking pictures of me, and, you know, wanting as a mushu magic, and just taking pictures, and it was like, everywhere we went up to the country, and they still, the Forbidden City in Shanghai, we're walking around OTV Tower, and I'm taking a picture of the tower. And a person just taps me on the shoulder, turns me around, just snaps a picture, and he goes, "Like your magic," and walks away. It was like, you know, feeling like David Copperfield for a day. It was like very unusual. I don't think I could say there's anyone. Everyone has. There isn't a single one that I don't cherish. Mm-hmm. I have a funny joke that the guys from England that do the Weekly Wizard Review, David and Craig, they gave me the Guest of the Year Award. 1 year, it was a used coffee cup they stole from the diner and wrote in Sharpie on it. And they gave it to me on the show, and I said, "I'll put it in a treasured place." Well, I went home, and I unpacked a whole bunch of my trophies and put them all across the fireplace, and then I videotaped me slowly packing them back up and replacing them just with the coffee cup.
And then you stand there looking at it fondly.
It's funny because the coffee cup, I have these little like shadow boxes when you come in the door in my house on either side, and it's got like the first program from the first IBM convention, and it has like stuff that Mandrake gave me and stuff that Vernon gave me and business card from Walt Disney and things like that. And in there I have the coffee cup. It always makes people ask, what's with that one? And they're very dear friends who picked on me, and it was fun.
And so you knew some years ago that you were going to be the guest of honor.
Yeah.
You know, usually this is something that isn't announced until like the last night. In this particular case, when Obi was the honoree for the 40th, then he said, okay, who's going to be coming up for the next 5 years?
And what an amazing thing for him to do it that way, because it gave us time to prepare.
Sure.
You know, that year in particular was the year the volcano, and British guys...
Oh, they couldn't make it over.
Couldn't make it.
That's right.
I walked in the door with... my luggage, having just done a lecture tour. Mm-hmm. And nobody said, you got your lecture in there? I said, yeah. I said, you're lecturing tonight because my lecturer can't be here. And I was like, oh, great. Yeah. I was excited. I did the lecture. As soon as the lecture was over, he did this announcement about who's going to be the next people, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And I'm holding my sign going, I've got only 4 years to build a whole new lecture because I just did it at 4F. And so the last 4 years has literally been in my head, what are you going to say at 4F and what's your lecture going to be?
Really? Well, that was your bread and butter.
Yeah, that was bread and butter was the one I did. So now I've got PB&J.
Yeah.
Powerful but justified.
Okay. Yeah, I remember whenever you came around and had done that then before. And I like the idea when you were saying at the lecture the other night that I guess when you're performing, saying, well, you just had spent all the time trying to figure out some new ideas and that you went into Target and got these you know, props of Skittles and all that.
Every year. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love every year here at 4F, starting, I guess, 4 years ago, because I'd done all my A material and I did all my B material and I did my C material and I was down to, like, you know.
Your undershorts.
Yeah. It was like, well, what do you do for these guys? And they always put me on the gala show and I'm always, you know, just before Bargatze and Merrill, which is a terrifying position. It's like, it's so
tear off the roof, yeah.
You've had 4 days of people who've done everything that's possible and then it's like, oh, now it's your turn. And so for the last 4 years, I've taken about $30, gone over to Target, and I just buy a bunch of crap and I make a magic show out of it. And my book test, Sheer Luck, that's just coming out, is completely based on buying books across the street and putting it together with some inspiration from David Downs and Kirk Charles. It just became this trick. And this year I did a whole thing with Smarties, and it was like, you know, this is, and I think it fooled a lot of magicians, which is really fun. And
that was
like,
fun.
A lot of people have come up and gone, will you tip it? Because you didn't tip it in the lecture. I'm like, really? I'll explain it to you right now. When I explain, they go, oh, good.
Yeah. <It's> like,
although I look like a nut because, you know, I had to have an entire box of just one color Smarties.
Right.
So I had to open the box, and then I had to go to one of those pick and pay candy stores, and I had the and I sat in there with the shovel scooping out just yellow ones. Now imagine the clerk looking at the guy on his hands and knees scooping out just yellow Smarties out of this giant bin of candies, and they're like, you know, you're supposed to just take a bunch of candy. So I said, yeah, I just like the yellow ones. It was pretty bizarre.
Yeah. Well, you have such a creative mind. You know, I've said many times that one of the things I really like about your lecture is, in every lecture that you've given, is that you have so many different ideas, I should say variations on a trick. Because I remember you were talking about poker chips one time, and you said, okay, well, then you can do this. And you gave like two or three ideas. And then after that, it's like, okay, well, usually most lectures would go to the next thing. And, you say, and then you can also do this. Okay, well, that's great. And then you can also, it was like, I think, a half hour with like 16 different ideas or something with it.
I appreciate you noticing. I think that, to me, when I see other performers.
And you're not milking it. It's not just like, it's sucky ideas.
Yeah, they're really good ideas. That means, to me, when I see that from another performer, I know that they're actually working their material. Because after they're bored of doing it the way they did it, they go, what else can I do with it? And then they work it until it's really good, and then they go, okay, now I'm bored of that. What else can I do with it? And I figure if you're going to spend $50 on a magic trick, you should be able to do a dozen things. Yeah. It shouldn't be just the one thing, right?
Like Washington, like, George Washington Carver, I guess, you know, with the peanut. You know,
exactly.
What else can I do with it?
Yeah,
you
know, what else can I do with that?
Ideas.
Same thing.
Yeah. So are you still doing the same thing? I mean, as far as, well, let me ask you then about your creative, how do you create things? I mean, what is your...
sleep deprivation.
Okay. Well, someone's asking about that. When you ever sleep.
I don't.
Your creative process, I guess. What are you actually kind of...
I don't have a process. By sleep deprivation, I see things a little different than most people do. I misunderstand things. With my mild dyslexia, I have trouble reading, so sometimes I'll read the instructions for something, but I do it wrong. Other times, I'll just pick something up and look at it until... And it's not like anything's an epiphany. I have some stuff in my notebooks that are 7 years old that are nowhere near completion. And then other times, I'll create a trick in 10 minutes, and it's using skills I've already had, so I can all incorporate them all, and all of a sudden I got an effect. I can go out and literally perform that night, and I've done. My wife goes... when you're dead and I write your memoirs and you're going to be exposed. I said, for what? She says, you always tell your students, once you practice, go home and practice. When you feel you're great, then go home and practice. And then after you're really ready, go home and practice. She says, but you'll think up the trick in the morning and that night you throw it on the show and the ship, don't you? And I go, well, once in a while.
And I thought it was funny you were saying about in the lecture that you were explaining Torn to Pieces in England, and then the next day somebody was doing the same.
I performed it the next day.
On television.
It's like...
And didn't even go far enough even to change his
name of my daughter. but he did a brilliant job.
Tell the story, because they don't know what we're talking about.
Literally, I performed at the Magic Circle in London, and it was a last-moment thing, so they only had 2 days in which to announce I was going to be there. Mm-hmm. And so the crowd was packed. It was awesome. Everybody was very excited, because it wasn't like, oh, it's going to be a long time. Mm-hmm. I did Torn to Pieces. It was the first time I ever showed it to anybody, because mm-hmm. I've been performing for years, but I released it that night. And I showed it to everybody. Everybody, oh, cheers and screams. I'm a jet lag, because I just flown in the day before into London. So I'm wide awake, sitting with my buddy in the hotel room, and we're flicking channels, mm-hmm. and I see this guy who looks like a magician, and I realize he's performing Torn to Pieces,
yeah.
and he's got a picture of my kid, and he's going, this is my daughter, Hannah. He does the whole trick, and he restores it. The reporter, the newscast person is going, I'm gobsmacked, which apparently is a good thing. They go to an interval, the little commercial. When they came back from the commercial, she starts to interview instead of doing more magic tricks. She's going, so tell me about Hannah. What does she like to do? And he's like, she likes to swim and horses. What kind of horses does she ride? Big ones. It's like, because you know, he's just, sure. He has no daughter, so he's making it up.
Well, he obviously didn't have enough to make up yeah. his own routine to begin with. So now he's having to make up something, and he's not good as well. Horses?
It's awesome. I have a friend who does Torn to Pieces, and he uses the picture of this beautiful girl.
Yeah.
And it's funny because he sits in a bar, yeah. and he takes a drink, and he looks at the picture, and he takes a drink, and he looks really angry, and he looks at some people, and he takes another drink, and you can see them all feeling uncomfortable. And then he tears the picture in half and tears it again, and he goes, she broke up with me. And it's like it draws all these people in, and they all start telling stories about, yeah. you know, relationship football. And he says, I let them go as long. And then you say, you know what? My psychologist told me I'm supposed to get rid of everything. That's why I tore up the picture. But I think my psychologist is wrong. And then he puts it all back together again.
Yeah.
And when he puts it back, you know, they see the backside, and he looks at them. He goes, there, back to normal. And when he turns it around, they see it. And they go, that's not normal. He says, no, I lived with the witch for 8 years. This is normal.
Wow.
Isn't that terrible?
That is. That's awesome. A different presentation.
It totally is.
Interesting. Well, so, okay, this is, I was just talking with Stephen Bergazzi earlier about not being the focus or the center of attention, you know, and he said, well, I kind of like it, you know, because last year they said everybody was, you know, talking and everything, and I know that your time has been, you know, torn from one place to the other.
Yeah, but, you know.
But this is just the beginning, since you're going to be the president of the IBM. You're going to be inducted at the
IBM SAM combined in
St. Louis.
Yeah.
You want to talk a little bit about that?
I'm really excited. I think they've almost reached the maximum. We're going to have 1,400 magicians mm-hmm. in St. Louis. The show list, Mike Miller is the person in charge of the talent, and mm-hmm. he has put together a blockbuster performers. He has an entire 4F honoree show. Stephen Bergazzi is going to host it. It's going to cool. have David Stone. It's going to have mm-hmm. Henry Evans, myself on the show. Mm-hmm. All honorees from, you know, 4F. I'm really excited for the contest, and for the first time that, you know, North American people will be picked to represent North America at FISM.
That's the new rule.
Which,
I mention that a little bit because some people may not be clear on that because the last time they had combined conventions, people from Korea won.
Both, our North American champions so far have been two brilliant Korean magicians, a Spanish magician and a British magician.
Mm-hmm.
I've got an Atlas. I'm pretty sure they're not North American.
Yeah.
And I have no problem with them winning a People's Choice Award. I think that's awesome.
Sure,
it's just the slots for FISM.
Mm-hmm.
We're only given so many for North America, and we
should have some representation.
We should, because, you know, somebody said, and they disagree, they said, well, we don't have enough talented North Americans to go to FISM. I said, well, really, if you look back at the list of Grand Prix winners in sleight of hand,
mm-hmm.
it's, you know, American, yeah. Canadian. It's like, it's
yeah.
a pretty easy list.
Yeah.
And it's like, they go, well, but not in stage. And I said, well, our stage has dropped off in the last few years, yes,
mm-hmm.
and we're losing out. But
that's
we're losing out because a lot of our North Americans aren't going to FISM to see what the level is. They said, well, then it should go over. I said, it's not the same to watch a contest as to be in a contest. It's
true.
Two different things. And so by having, you know, a dozen people from North America really go over, compete, and see what it's like, it'll only engage and energize North America to mm-hmm. create better. If you really think about it, as North American magicians, we've really moved away from the act. It used to be, when I was young, we were all 8-minute acts. I grew up with, you know, Ice McDonald and Greg Frewen and John Chirac and Eric Busson. We all had a bird act, and it was all 8 minutes, and we all competed against each other. And now when you go to see these contests, there aren't many manipulation or bird acts from North America, because we all do a talk act with comedy, and we're all doing banquets, or you're doing close-up.
Yeah.
And we've really moved in a different direction, but it's time to start moving back into performances where we can compete in the world stage.
And so what do you think will bring that about?
I think the, having more North Americans actually compete at FISM will help that. And having these combined every 3 years is such a good idea. Mm-hmm. It allows the IBM and SAM to have their separate competitions and their separate events. And then one time we all come together. This is the best opportunity for an act to compete right now, because if they're an IBM member and an SAM member, and they attend this competition, they could in fact win the top award in IBM, the top award at SAM, and a FISM slot, and the People's Choice Award. I mean,
yeah, with the cash they win from that, that would also help pay for shipping
for
over their illusions
and doing everything
to get over to FISM.
Totally.
Yeah.
And the amount of contracts that they've generated and performance things, it's, and the exposure of it. I didn't win the IBM SAM. I took second prize to Mark Oberon, and I have no problem with it. I mean, it was like, whatever, because I mean, I got, I think I got 23 contracts out of it. I went all over the world off of losing.
I can't say that I have a similar story by all that, but I had lost a competition at the Texas Association of Magicians once, but a guy came over to me and said, I really like your show. He said, I want to book you. So
awesome.
I got a very lucrative contract, you know, from something, so which was a lot better than the trophy.
I never looked at the contests as win or lose. I've always looked at them as like a showcase, an opportunity for people to see your act, and an opportunity to make friends. Mm-hmm. For a lifetime. You know,
that's what Lance Burton always
in.
Talks about. You know, that it's important to be in contest, because he looks around at people and saying, well, you know, these guys are my buddies because I used to compete with them, you know, in the IBM contest and other places, you know.
He even has a secret set of lecture notes that he gives to young people. Yeah. It's a book, a beautiful book. Uh-huh. Gave one to my daughter, and I had the opportunity to read it. And it talks all about how treasure the backstage time.
Yes.
I look, in 1991 in Las Vegas, I competed against Ice McDonald in the competition for the SAM. Mm-hmm. And we were backstage sitting next to each other for the whole contest, hanging out. And now this year he'll be president of the SAM while I'm president of the IBM, and we're looking at each other going, didn't do so bad for ourselves, didn't we?
That's pretty like, cool.
And we're the best of friends.
Just, and Ice is here at the convention.
He is.
The 4F and too. So again, going into being the president, I know that each president usually has an agenda as to what they want to do, or you know, what they want to spread around the world, and what is your plan, what's your platform?
My goal is to really connect the places that are international that don't get to see the president so much. So I have a lot of travel plans. I'm going to some places where they don't have IBM rings, places like Norway. I'm hoping to form one in Argentina. I want to bring the guys in. I'm going to do the trips, of course, to England and things like that. I want to go to Australia and New Zealand. I really want to go to some places like Dubrovnik in Croatia to help them to form one, and a lot of positive impact from all those. But I also want to bring in the youth more, and we're modernizing the IBM. We're better website now. Our linking rings, you know, totally in PDF or online flip page format. I want to make things more accessible to the members. I want to make things, I want membership to mean a little bit more. This year we're going to be producing some free one-day magic events all around the world for IBM members only. They come for free and they get an entire day with workshops, lectures, parlor show, everything all included, all for free as long as you're a good member and standing of the IBM. I want them to know that belonging to it, we're an organization that really is about connecting people together. Len Vintas, who, you know, started it, a Canadian in the middle of nowhere, wanted friendships. And it began as three guys that their only connection was magic, and that they were in the middle of nowhere and they had nobody else to talk to. And now we're all connected so much easier. I brought new people in for my convention, very clever people who have innovative ideas that are going to change the way things happen. And I think that shaking things up is a good thing. And the IBM board is really behind me.
That's good.
And I love that.
Because we have so many old people, and I say old, I should say, that are retired on the board. And so, you know, I think by having you and Oscar and some other younger
people. The new generation, Joe Turner, they're great guys who are really, you know, wanting to do something.
The board's giving them the latitude they need.
They're allowing in and fresh ideas. There's Becky Wells is on the board, and you know, she managed like massive projects in her real world.
Yeah.
And then I go, wow, this is nothing for you. Oh yeah, this is like a heartbeat. I'm like, that's so awesome. And to be able to depend on all the people that are on the board, and to have people behind you, like I love Bill Wells to death and Mike Stratman. Mm-hmm. They're guys that you can go to. Chip Hosler. These are people that you can speak to. Obi, Joan, all of them. So many of the past presidents really were the people that talked to me and said, we want you to be the face of the IBM and go out there. And I was like, only if you're going to support me. Right? Yeah. You have to be there and you have to guide me. I want, you know, help. I really want this to be, I want them to see that, you know, the IBM is not a bunch of unfamiliar faces, that these are professionals who are willing to give of their time to pay back because the IBM has done so much for me.
You know, for the longest time, it seems like in most organizations, I should say the IBM and SAM, at least, I don't know about the magic circle, but the presidents have traditionally been people who have been in the business world but not been a full-time professional magician. And so I think when we first had Carol Fox as one of the first ones I could think of, you know, who was really full-time, and then later Bab Bergeron. You know, to have someone then like you who, you know, represents the organization and is invested in the success of the organization and not just a figurehead, because you are intimately involved in every aspect.
Yeah, somebody said to me, so you don't do anything, right, Sean? You just stand there, and I'm like, wow, you don't know me.
Yeah, let me introduce you to the real Sean.
Yeah. You don't just put me in front of something and say, here's what you say. That's not me.
And Oscar's the same way. I mean, he's just not going to be a figurehead.
Nope.
And Joe Turner as well. I mean, these guys are very much invested.
Very good thinkers with really good ideas, totally invested, and really want to put they roll up their sleeves.
Right.
They're the guys that at your local ring are the people that pack up the chairs when you're all hanging out having the coffee.
That's right. Yeah, some of the past presidents, you know, have kind of been in and out and then haven't been seen again or haven't been heard of within the magic world. But, you know, people like you, I mean, this, I think, by having a national, international face, you know, and it's recognizable, is going to be helpful for their organization.
I hope it does.
And Ice McDonald as well.
Ice McDonald, phenomenal. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we really want to remove, you know, that stigma of, oh, look, they're rivals. It's like...
Stepchildren or something, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, nope, Ice and I, they couldn't get two guys closer. Mm-hmm. We got some good surprises coming.
Yes. Oh, I'm excited about that. Well, good. Thank you very much. I appreciate your time, and I know it's valuable. You got to head off for some other stuff here, too.
I always appreciate talking to you, Scott. Listen all the time.
It's always a lot of fun. Thanks a lot. That was our guest of honor for the 44th 4F convention in 2014. A lot of Fs in there.
Farquhar.
Including the Farquhar. That's the magic word. Actually, this is Scotty for the magic word. Scotty out.
Well, we just finished the third day, final evening show. We still got another full day for tomorrow going here on for day four, but this starts to complete day three, and soon be heading up for donuts and coffee and everything. But I'm here with Richard Hatch, formerly of H&R Magic Books. Hey there, Dick.
Hi, Scotty. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, thank you. Good to see you. Glad you made it down.
Been a couple of years since I've been at Fector.
I was going to say that Charlie's been here, but you haven't been.
I haven't been since I moved to Utah. So
how is it up there in the...
I like it. It was a good move for personal family reasons. Worked out great, and I'm enjoying it. But I'm happy to be back in beautiful Batavia again.
Exactly. Now, the past few years, you haven't made it because you had other shows or working on, or what was the?
No, not necessarily. Might have been family issues. And this year worked out time-wise, and I could make it. And then, unfortunately, Charlie couldn't because of the family situation on his end, and Marshall. Also has two young kids and a full-time job, so he couldn't make it. And then I'm here representing H&R, but
without books.
Exactly. Without a portfolio.
But then you almost didn't make it. Tell me about your accident.
Well, last Saturday.
I saw this on Facebook.
Yeah, it looks a lot worse than it turned out to be, which was part of the fun of putting those photos up there. But I went out for a run, just a 20-minute run from my house. We have a little... puppy that I was running with, which I'm not used to, and I stumbled, and I think because I didn't want to let go of the dog's leash, I think that probably prevented me from properly trying to break my fall.
Right.
And so I ended up hitting my forehead quite sharply against the sidewalk, and it created a head wound. There was a lot of blood, but I was only a block away from our house, so Rosemary, my wife, was able to get me to the emergency room and got it stitched up. The thing I was concerned about is the emergency room doctor said, now, you need to have these stitches out after 5 days. If you wait too long, it'll cause scarring, blah, blah, blah. It's like, well, in 5 days, I'm going to be in Batavia. How's that going to work out? Then I started to think, you know, but a lot of doctors interested in magic. With a group this size, I'll bet there are several MDs who would be qualified to do it. And I, before getting here, thought of my friend Raj Madhuk from Twin Cities, who's a dermatologist, and contacted him through Facebook and said, sure, you know, he was a little worried about getting his surgical equipment past security on the plane, but somehow he managed that. And maybe probably about an hour ago, he... took out my stitches and put on some temporary tape to bind it up, and did a super job. I highly recommend his services if you are in a similar situation.
Well, hopefully nobody will be in this situation.
I hope not.
Kind
it was
of thing,
no
so.
Fun. But, you know, that day I was I had a memorial service to go to and then a show to do that night. I was late to the memorial service. I did make it. I did the show. I wore sunglasses to kind of protect the audience because it was kind of a gruesome image. And then I went to a movie afterwards. So it was a pretty full day despite the injury.
So it really looked a lot worse than it actually
really
was.
It really looked a lot worse than it turned out to be. And I think it's healing up pretty quickly. I'm no longer... The first day I was here, I was wearing sunglasses because I was kind of self-conscious. Now I'm letting people suffer. Well, I wouldn't say fine, but it's much better.
Yes.
It's getting better fast. So I'm pleased with that.
Well, good, good. And so tell me about also, while I've got you, the Hatch Academy of Magic.
Yeah. My wife Rosemary's a violinist, and one of the decisions in moving to Salt Lake, we live in Logan, about 90 miles north of Salt Lake, 90 minutes, about 80 miles, was how are we going to make a living? We knew how to make a living, more or less, in Houston.
Sure.
And I had decided not to take H&R with me because I wanted to concentrate more on performing. But it's a small college town, about 50,000 in the city of Logan, about 100,000 in the valley, Cache Valley, which runs north-south up into Idaho, northern Utah. So it's not a big population base like Houston was. And we thought, well, Rosemary could do teaching, but the problem is how do you let people know that a new violinist is in town? That's not exactly a news story. Violinist moves to town, big deal.
Right.
But you open a school of magic and music, now that's kind of interesting from a media point of view. So that was what made us think, well, we'll start this Hatch Academy of Magic and Music. We found a wonderful Victorian, I guess technically Queen Anne Mansion, built in 1878 that's owned now by the city of Logan. Some people put a lot of money into bringing it back to its earlier glory and then gave it to the city. The city lets it be managed by something called the Cache Valley Center for the Arts, which has a big performing arts complex that this is kind of part of. It's in a corner of the big theater. We just had Kevin and Cindy Spencer did their Theater of Illusion the big stage.
Okay.
And so we're tucked into this mansion that's kind of in a corner of the bigger performing arts complex. And there was room available for us to rent there. I've got the whole attic, which is neat, with a lot of gables that I can slap my posters on. And so I framed it in the press releases, so the thing I'm proudest of, because it was very successful. In the press release I said it was conceived as a combination of Hogwarts and Juilliard, and the press really liked that. So I can say dubbed by the press, a combination.
Yes.
It backfired to the extent that for maybe a week or two I had more students than Rosemary, and that was not my intent, but it was kind of nice it worked out that way. Now she's got a lot of students, more than she really would like to have, and I have a few students that, you know, will come. Her students come every week for either a half an hour to an hour, and they practice in between. My students come every couple of months and say, well, let's work on cups and balls, or well, let's work on linking, or is it something they've seen me do and want to work on? So that's fun, but I'm trying to grow a magic community there. It is small, so I don't know, you know, how much potential for growth it has. We've hosted a few lectures that people have been in the area, but we don't draw from other areas. I kind of think, boy, it'd be great to have a magic convention. Like, I love Magic in the Rockies in Fort Collins. That's a similar town. It's a small college town.
Mm-hmm.
There they can draw from Denver. They can draw from Cheyenne. People come from Nebraska and other places, and they have, over the years, built up a tremendous reputation because of the talent they've had.
Mm-hmm.
And even they're struggling, and they have a pretty active, you know, membership group there that does all the work.
In Colorado, right?
And for me, I'd be doing all the work and with no guarantee that people would come. So I don't know if that's ever going to happen, but it's a beautiful setting.
Right.
And so it would be a nice place to have a convention. Mm. I just don't know if people would come. So we're keeping that idea in mind, but haven't actively taken any steps in that direction yet. But I like
see.
It. It's a beautiful location, and for family reasons, it worked out great. We bought a home in a nearby community called Providence about a year ago in April. So we've been in that home a little over a year, and so we're kind of setting down roots.
That sounds great. So it sounds like you're going to be sitting in there for some time.
I think so, yeah. Come visit.
I would love to come that way. I know you come back down to Houston.
I'm going
to
be there in October.
Good.
The next planned trip. I'd like to come before then, but I don't know that I will be, but definitely I'll be there end of October. So, yeah, hope to see you then.
Good. We'll see you then. Thanks a lot. I'm glad that you're looking better and feeling better.
Thanks for asking.
You're welcome.
I appreciate all the concern.
That was Dick Hatch for The Magic Word. This is Scotty Allen.